Welcome. I'm Victoria Schneps, and we are with our Power Woman. And do I have a Power Woman for you? I am delighted to introduce Dr. Jean Wright, who is now the actual CEO of a very important foundation, the COPD Foundation. And that foundation is really a leader in healthcare, advancing all kinds of help for people with lung disease and that terrible diagnosis of COPD. She has devoted her life for medicine and having been an anesthesiologist and a pediatrician and all these wonderful things that she has done. She's also traveled to Europe as well as being living in China and remarkably like me with four children that are adopted from China. So welcome, Dr. Wright. I'm so delighted to have you with me.
Oh, I could talk to you a long time. I've already figured that out in the pre-show conversation.
Well, you know, that's my blessing to be able to reach women that have achieved such great success in their careers and yet balance it because, you know, maybe it was later in your life, but you ended up with four children. And I know as a mother of four, it's not easy balancing even with a lot of help in the, that's my secret weapon is a lot of help.
Yes.
But I, you know, I wonder what was in you in your growing up years that helped to be, make you who you are. Were there people influencing you as you grew up?
Absolutely. I grew up in Detroit in a blue collar family. No one in my family had gone to college, but my parents and aunts and uncles were all talking to me about it early on. And there was a pediatrician, Dr. Ruth Kraft, who I met, the only female doctor I knew through my whole childhood. Because of my age and when I grew up, women didn't go into medicine. In fact, Dr. Kraft had to get a PhD before she could get an MD. That's how competitive it was back then. But we attended the same church, and I used to say to my parents, could I go sit with her at church? I mean, that's the kind of role model that she was with me. I don't know if I thought it would just rub off on me or what have you, but we actually remained, she was probably 40 years older than me, but we remained friends for a long, long time to the point where she even, when she was in the nursing home, she would call me and she'd say, I want to talk medicine. I want to talk about medicine. I want to talk about, she couldn't say the phrase internet. She really didn't know it. She called it the interfuse or the highway, the information highway. And she just missed talking about science and medicine. And she was just a phenomenal role model on me. And I saw how she persevered. You know, in the pre-show, we were talking about resilience and that ability to have self-confidence. I saw it in her. And I thought, if she can do it, you know, I can do it. Now,
you have absolutely done it. I mean, your journey.
Well, even though
so...
I was a lot younger than her, when I went to med school, only 5% of my class were women. Today, women are more than 50% of a med school class. 5%. You know, I grew up in the era where there was no women's changing room in the operating room area. It was doctors and nurses. And then there was like, where do women physicians go? Well, we don't go anyplace because they, you know. So I have come up through that era. In fact, now I have a daughter who is a pre-med and she's as much of a fireball as I am. And she said, Mom, with your personality, why didn't you become a surgeon? I said, I would have loved to, but we weren't allowed to.
Wow.
We couldn't get into surgery then. So the world has just changed in so many different ways. And, you know, I know that you were asking me about, you know, what does it take? And you know, part of it is that resilience, but you know, it's like you. Part of it's just showing up, right? You just apply. We were talking about the University of Michigan, of which I'm a very proud alum. I'm very obnoxious during football and basketball season, and I wear all the clothes and sing the songs to people who don't want to hear it.
When you are, you know, so engaged as you are with your Michigan team, people being engaged in what they're doing really makes them build their mission and with them,
I know.
It
I just
drives them.
Yep. Here's the link. It's you apply, right? I used to say to my daughter, why did your mom not go to Harvard? And she goes, well, I don't know. I said, because I didn't apply.
Mm-hmm.
Right? I thought the pinnacle was going to Michigan, which it probably is, right? Still being a Michigan fan. But
Yes.
if you don't see yourself in that role, if you don't see that potential, and that's why I'm so glad you do this and focus on women, because people need to see, women need to see people like them in roles that have crafted out a path, and then they can sit back and go, oh, I can do that. Or I can at least take the first step, right, in that career or that path. And then, after you take the step, then the water's part, right? We often say in innovation, and that's a big part of my career, is that there's four things that keep people from innovating. Fear of failure, fear of criticism, fear of the foggy unknown, like what would happen if I actually became, an ICU doctor? What would happen if I moved to China for a month? What would happen? And then the last one is so obvious is fear of the first step, like just start, right? Just start. And that's kind of my simple advice to if you think you want to go into medicine, just start, right? Start the process. If you think you want to start a media company, just start. Yeah, there'll be lots of blockades in the way, but a bad baseball analogy, but you miss 100%, right? Of the swings you don't take, or basketball, the shots you don't take. So I am all about showing up, trying, and then
Well, I'm
you can
fascinated
do it.
also with your career. How I adore the Chinese culture. And when I was in China, I was a media person at a conference of business leaders. And I said, I think I was Chinese in my other life because I love everything about China's
Yeah. My
culture.
kids are definitely convinced that I'm Chinese, and you can kind of tell when I smile, I sort of look that way. But I just fell in.
What brought you there? What brought you there?
I went right after the country first opened, literally after, Nixon first opened the country, and they were so desperate for education, and the Cultural Revolution had set medicine back so far. And so I went with the team that taught open heart surgery. And we had a surgeon, a cardiologist. I did the anesthesia. And because it was so difficult to travel there, we would go a month at a time and kind of set up the whole operating room and what have you. And it was a grand adventure. And I just learned so much, and I got hooked on the language. I should speak it much better than I do, but I can at least order a good meal in a Chinese restaurant and get a bus ticket. In fact, I was just with some Chinese friends the other night, and an older lady was very surprised. She kept patting me on the shoulder every time, I said something correctly, because as you know, it's tonal, and so how you pronounce it is as important as what you're saying. And I just got a chance to see a whole, culture and world change. And I hope we get back to having more open borders with China. But I started to understand then the impact of the one child policy, and I saw these little girls being abandoned, and I thought, I can't change the world, and I'm single. My generation of doctors, the women often ended up being single, and I thought I could help one little girl. So I adopted one little girl who was actually a patient of mine in China. And then she talked me into little sister. I mean, this girl she could talk the shine off of a table. She is a really awesome influencer. And she said, we need more kids in our family. And she just went at me. And so I thought, well, you know what? I'm older. The girls, they probably could be really good friends later in life, and they are good friends. So I'll get another girl, thinking that they would also be older and speak Chinese, because my first one came, she was almost 5. The second one, though, came as a baby, and I was like, no diapers, no babies, no diapers, no babies. But she's been a real blessing. And then after that, I thought, as a little tangent, my hospital system, Emory University, actually sent me to business school. They saw in me something that I didn't see, but they thought I had an ability to lead and manage money. And so they actually paid my way through business school, Emory Business School. I sat down and did the business math, and I actually figured out what's the variable cost of a third child. And I thought, I've already got a house that would be adequate. I've got a van. I've got a nanny. It's probably braces and, some school tuition. And I also knew that I was not going to be in that sandwich generation, because many of us as women, we take care of aging parents and younger children at the same time. And I did not have that struggle. My parents had already passed. So two children became three. And then 10 years later, we went back and visited an orphanage. And some people bring home T-shirts. Some bring home flags. I brought home a fourth child. Now, I make it sound really easy. It wasn't quite that easy.
No. Being the mother of four children is never easy.
He fits in. He's going to be a chef. He's going to culinary school this fall. He's learned English. He's just made for us. In fact, he asked one of his sisters one day, why did mom adopt me? Because she was older. She didn't need another kid. Why'd she adopt me? And the older sister looked at her and said, well, obviously, mom only adopts smart kids. And so she saw you were smart. And I'm like, yes, good answer.
You're smart, and I want to know the transition from a practicing physician to an executive and what you're doing now. Let's talk a little bit about the COPD Foundation that you run.
Okay. I was focused on children as patients the first half of my career, but I always did research. And after I went to business school, I learned really the basics of, now we would call it information technology. Early on, we called it predictive analytics. Later, we called it AI. But I got in very early on the curve. And I think I'm an early adopter, whether it's an innovative product, a computer, being one of the first women to go to med school. I'm very comfortable in that foggy unknown. And so I got into IT very early on. And by the time I came to Charlotte, I was using IT to actually look through big databases at hospitals and find patients that probably were undiagnosed. And COPD, chronic obstructive pulmonary disease, is one of those conditions. It's the fourth leading cause of death. Most people don't know that. I know. It used to be thought of as the older white man. Think of James Dean standing by the car smoking, or the older factory worker or military veteran. It's now a women's disease. We have come a long way, baby. But in that coming, we also picked up some habits that push us over the edge. But even if we didn't smoke, women still have a higher incidence of COPD. Partly because of our height, we don't have the same lung cage capacity. Probably something related to hormones. Certainly in lots of countries where you cook and there's gas fumes or combustible carbon in your kitchen, you're over that all the time. Where you're raised, what your parents did, all those things make women at high risk. So anyways, I got into the data side of things. And the then CEO of the foundation found out about my work. And he said, I want you to come. I want you to get on the board. And I want you to be a delightful disruptor.
I love that.
And I will tell you, I am disruptive. And most days I'm delightful. But in fact, I'll say to my staff, you choose. Do you want me to be disruptive or do you want me to be delightful? Right. but he said, we have enough pulmonologists who know the disease. We need somebody who looks at it differently, who looks at the field differently. So I brought that in. And unfortunately, John died. John was the founder, just a very inspirational man. He died far too soon, not from his disease. He actually had a bad slip and fall. But I was on the board, and then the board went through several CEO changes. And then there came a time after COVID where they asked me, you're now retired. Would you consider being CEO? And I thought, my kids are older now. Three out of four were actually either in college or through college. And I thought, my phrase is women can have it all. It's just hard to have at the same time. They had approached me a couple years before that, but the kids, they weren't driving. They were at home. I felt like I was running a Waffle House besides my job. But this was the right time. And I came in and looked at it and went, wow. There is so much potential here, and there's a great team that's already in place. But I came back to the board, and I said, if you hire me, you get the Gene Wright deal, right, which is innovation, it's growth, it's strategy. So I set a goal that we would enlarge ourselves 10 times. And that's not just a, You know how CEOs will try to be inspire, and they'll do a moonshot or something like that. I said, we are too small to serve the 30 million people that have this disease. We need to scale up to meet the needs of the company. So we are on that journey. I'm in my fourth year as CEO. If you were in New York City today, you would look at Times Square and there are billboards now up there about COPD. If you got on a bus, there's 1,000 bus routes with advertisements about COPD. Really making people aware, like, could this disease be you? I sit in church or other group settings and I can hear people cough and I go, I know what that is. I hear that. I was just in Korea and there was somebody sitting behind me in a conference and I thought, I recognize what's going on there. So we're trying to get people to realize it could be you. Do you have a persistent cough? Are you short of breath? Are you unable to do the things you really like to do? And it's not really
Well,
sophisticated
listen,
in.
you're giving us these tips. What is there something to the next step that if you just mention those steps of analysis of yourself, what do you do? Where can you turn for help?
Yeah, well, we would encourage you to come to our website, right? And
And what is
look at
the
copdfoundation.org, or you can just put COPD Foundation in your Google search or whatever search engine. And then, we have, five questionnaires that people can ask themselves and go, oh yeah, these things describe me. Or I can take this little survey and print it out and take it to my doctor or PA and nurse practitioner and start a conversation and say, look, doc, I'm not a smoker, or I find I'm really short of breath now. And breathlessness is actually very hard to quantify, almost like pain is hard to quantify, right? But we don't deny people aspirin or Advil or important pain medications when they're in the hospital. Because we know pain is real. Breathlessness is real. And the more time I spend with patients now, in fact, back to that segue, my research then from 2010 on, the last 15 years, has been focused on patients with COPD because I call them the missing millions. In fact, I have a couple of TED Talks out there. I have different color hair because it was before the gray transition, but this is still the same right and the same Corny Jean Wright humor, but we're trying to reach the missing millions every way we can. And then there are patients who got diagnosed maybe 10 years ago, but they don't realize new medications are out there that are more specific, that impact the inflammation in their airway even more. Now, we're not at the point where Humpty Dumpty can be put back together again, but we can make life better. In fact, in the COPD Foundation, we say, we go for the cure. Can't get the cure. We want to make life better. And number three, we want to create a movement. And thanks to you and to other folks who've had us on their podcast, you're helping us get the word out so people begin to recognize it. You can tell I'm wearing orange. I even have orange fingernails. I even have an orange Prius. Like,
I love
really?
it.
It is so obnoxious. In fact, my kids said the other day when I was up visiting them at college, Mom, you need to get a visitor sticker because security is going to recognize that orange car doesn't belong in this parking lot. So
Oh, my
I am
goodness.
out there like on message every opportunity. And then, as all foundations, we're raising money. We are raising money for the cure and so that we can have centers of excellence, not only for COPD, the broadest disease, but also for one of the subsets of the disease called bronchiectasis, which is also a mainly women's disease. So we're trying to get the word out there every single way that we can. And when people like you are gracious enough to invite me, I'm going to show up, right? I am
Well,
going to show up.
we are thrilled that Dr. Jean Wright, who is the CEO of COPD Foundation, has been roaring her message. And I love every word you had to say and share because they're powerful truths. So thank you so much, Dr. Wright, for being with us today.
Oh, you're very welcome.
Have a
Thank you for the
wonderful
chance
week.
to share the word.
Well, the COPD Foundation.org is a place to go to get more information and to donate. Thank you for being with me. This is Victoria Schnepp signing off until next time. Bye now.